had to be a genetic artifact created by the Trilithon builders. Maybe it is. I don't know. We sat in silence till I heard Kenlith's odd whisper.
My mother thought you were born to be a god.
No, the word exploded in the dark. I'm no god. He moved abruptly to turn the headlamps on. Blazing ahead, they flooded a flat wasteland, white as new snow. Nothing broke it as far as I could see. Not a rock, not a building, not a tree, not anything at all.
Where?
Kenlith's voice was hoarse and hushed.
Where is this?
I'd like to know. Graham started the crawler again, turning to let the headlights sweep all around us. There was no Trilithon, nothing but that flat white waste. I shivered as if its dead desolation had crept into the machine. Let's take a look, he said. A look outside. He went back to the airlock. The door thumped and sealed behind him. Air hissed. We waited a long time until at last it hissed again. He stumbled dazedly back, shaking his head. We're stuck, he muttered. The outside hatch won't open. A safety lock, I guess. I can't be sure how to read the instruments, but I think they show air pressure zero and outside temperature close to absolute zero. That would mean the planet has no sun. His face turned harder in the birthmark's glow. If Derek and Lupe got here ahead of us, I'm afraid they're dead. Kenlith looked at me, his eyes huge.
Will we die?
All I could do was put my arm around him. Graham was peering into the pool of light ahead of the crawler.
See that?
Suddenly he was pointing. I saw a faint gray trace across it. Derek and Lupe did get here. They left a track in that white stuff, which I guess is frozen air. A trail I think we can follow. We set out along it, the machine crawling a little faster than a man could walk. Ram let me take my turn in the driver's seat, but that faint gray trail ran straight forever, with never a turn or a break, and the machine drove itself. A frozen world. Ram hunched his shoulders as if he felt its bitter chill. Frozen nearly forever, but it must have been alive, with air until it froze, water and weather to wear the surface smooth. How long ago? He shook his head. I can't imagine. Kenlith served our meals from the food and drink dispenser, which fascinated him. The strange textures and flavors turned me off at first, but hunger was a great appetizer. Synthetics. With a grin of relish, Ram finished a chocolate-colored bar. But I've had worse. Those old engineers had human tastes. Very slowly, the crown of worlds rose higher in what we came to call the East. Crowded constellations followed it. Hot red stars, cold blue giants, stars yellow white as our own sun, crowded closer and closer together till half the sky blazed with diamond fire. Imagine, Derek, Ram shook his head at the sky and the faint trail ahead, if he's okay. He used to teach an astronomy course back at Eastern with a little telescope of his own. This sky should drive him wild. By my watch, 20 hours of Earth time had passed by then. A lazy planet, Ram said. The day is maybe 80 hours. The ages must have slowed it down. The machine crawled on and on. We slept, stretched out on seats that folded flat. We ate when we were hungry. We scanned that great swarm of stars rising out of the east, climbing till it covered all the sky and flooded that empty white infinity with starlight brighter than our own moon had been. Nothing changed it until Kenlith, sitting at the joystick, cried out,
"There! See?"
It was hard for me to see, but at last I found a saw-toothed break in the straight horizon. Hour by hour it stretched longer. The tiny teeth became towers, climbing higher and higher against the bright mosaic of varicolored stars.
A city?
Kenlith was enchanted.
Have we found a city?
It had been a city. A wall had stood around it, half of it leveled now with gaps that let us see the buildings. Climbing taller as we neared them, they became magnificent and strange. Slender pyramids stabbed spear-like toward the star-packed zenith. Hexagonal columns clustered among domes and spires and soaring shapes I knew no names for. Their splendor awed us into silence. Ram stopped the machine. "A ruin," he whispered. "I wish we could have seen it whole." Half of it was gone, reduced to stumps and rock piles and bare foundations. Deep canyons yawned between rubble mountains. All of it was shrouded under hills of frost-white dust. "Dead," Ram shivered. "It was dead before our world was born."
"Were they people?"
Kenlith whispered. "The doors look human-sized," Ram said. "That's one good sign."
"Well, what killed them?"
"A fallen meteor?" Ram shook his head. "A missile attack? Or maybe they just got tired of living. We may never know." We sat there a long time before he moved the machine again. "A field day for Lupe." Ram swung the headlights to scan the way ahead. "She was wild for anything prehistoric. Just imagine her here." The trail was hard to follow. They had gone through a gap in the wall and into a magnificent avenue. A ridge of toppled masonry had turned them back. Our own tracks were laid over theirs until we lost them altogether. We, ourselves, were lost. A dozen hours were gone before we found a gap that took us back out of the wall. With the constellations for a compass and starlight over the ruins, we picked up the trail. Again, the faint gray track ran straight into a world dead forever. Frost crystals flashed and vanished in our headlights, but we saw no other change. The star clouds covered all the sky with diamonds and crept slowly on until they slowly sank into what we called the west. Outside again, we crawled on and on and on through a darker midnight than I'd ever imagined, with only the headlights to keep us on the trail. We took turns at the joystick, turns at staring into darkness, turns asleep. We ate again and still again. I asked Ram how long he thought our water and food might last. He didn't know. Another day of starlight dawned at last, the crown of worlds climbing again out of the east.
"There!"
Kenlith pointed ahead.
"Well, what is that?"
His eyes were sharper than mine. I saw nothing until an hour later, when the stars were bright enough to show me a tiny pyramid on the horizon. Ram woke to watch it with us. It grew until I saw that it was no pyramid at all, but a vast cone shape instead, towering alone out of infinite flatness.
"A mountain?"
Kenlith asked.
"Is it a mountain?"
"Not here." Ram shook his head. "Not likely, though it's high enough." It was 1,000 feet tall, he guessed. Half a mile across, the surface sloping smoothly up. Kenlith made out a spiral path that wound around from the ground to a railed platform at the top. "Something built," Ram said, "likely when the city was." Like the city, it was rounded under heavy frost and dust.
"Can we climb it?"
Kenlith was eager.
"To the top?"
"If Derek and Lupe did," Ram said, "we'll follow till we find them." They hadn't climbed, we found, but had gone down instead. The track took us past a long ridge of frozen air that had been bulldozed to clear a wide, open ring around the cone. I saw a dark archway in the foot of it. Light flickered there, and a long crystal robot crawled out to meet us. It reared in front of us. The little cubes and disks and pyramids and cones and shapeless masses morphed into a glittering travesty of Lupe in her jeans and field jacket and even something like her wide-brimmed field hat. The eyes flashed red, and it beckoned us to stop. "Lupe Vargas!" Ram stopped the crawler and sat gaping at it. "We found him!"
"Found what?"
Kenlith goggled at it. Its eyes flashed again. Ram moved abruptly to answer with our headlights. Its eyes shone green, and it stepped aside to beckon us through the arch. Ram drove us past it into a wide tunnel that sloped gently down. The walls were high, and our headlamps glinted red and gold on tiles that made intricate patterns of interlocking rosettes. A paradise for Lupe. Ram whistled. What a culture to explore. The tunnel curved, always sloping down. We followed for several miles, finally out into a cavernous space with a circular floor. A blue dome arched above it, softly luminous. We saw no exit. Ram stopped the machine. We sat there waiting, hoping to see Derek or Lupe. Kenlith fidgeted, staring uneasily around at the featureless dome.
What's this?
It flickered before he could finish and became a bright blue sky with a warm sun rising in the east. The crawler sat on a grassy plain with clumps of trees around us. Smoke climbed from a brown lava cone on the north horizon. A small stream ran past us toward a distant waterhole. Far off to the south, veiled in the mist of distance, a taller cone was capped with white. Kenya, Ram gasped. We're on the rim of the rift. He shook his head and pointed south. That's Kilimanjaro.
Where's this?
Kenlith gaped at me.
What happened to us?
It's a picture, Ram told him. A living picture of the world where I grew up. He caught his breath and turned to stare at me. But how did it get this far from Earth? I had no idea. We sat there drinking it in. A little herd of zebras was grazing near us, a few impalas among them. A pair of giraffes browsed treetops beyond. A great white-tusked elephant ambled around a clump of the trees, half a dozen more behind it. Ignoring us, they stopped to drink from the stream. A dark-maned lion lay on a rocky hill, its great head lifted, watching sleepily.
People!
Kenlith pointed. They came toward us, wading the stream in single file, naked and hairy, but walking erect, they were certainly human. In the lead were three or four black-bearded men, carrying long spears and stone axes in rawhide pouches slung from their shoulders. One carried an impala hindquarter on his back, still in its hide. Another had a little boy with a missing foot astride his neck. Two of the women carried babies, one a full water skin. A tall girl had golden fruit in a fiber bag. A younger girl led her little sister by the hand. A wisp of smoke drifted from a little pile of ashes in a bird nest of mud and woven grass on an older woman's head. She was the keeper of the fire. Two boys had slings and bags of pebbles. One ran to the front, whirled a rock around his head, and let it fly. The other darted to look for what it might have hit. Kenlith blinked at Ram.
Who are they?
Us, Ram said. The way Lupe thought we were 200,000 years ago, when somebody brought us back to Earth from wherever we were evolved or engineered. They vanished. The dome around us was smooth and blue again. A door slid open ahead of the crawler to reveal another wide tunnel mouth ahead. A vehicle glided out. A crawler like ours, perhaps a little larger. I glimpsed the man at the joystick. Derek Ironcraft.
Chapter 35. The machine crawled closer. Derek waved a greeting. Lupe sat in the seat beside him. In an odd white outfit like Ram's and Kenlith, she was almost a stranger. Her field hat was gone, her hair hung behind her shoulders in a long black braid. Derek had grown a thick beard and long bronze hair secured with a red headband. Derek! Ram bent over the instruments and pulled out a knob that looked like a microphone. Lupe, do you hear me? Derek waved again, but I heard no answer. Lupe shaded her eyes to see us. Ram shook his head and edged us closer. Derek gestured for us to stop. He backed away and turned his machine to bring the rear doors together. The airlocks thumped and hissed. Suddenly, Derek and Lupe were coming through, a gleaming metal and crystal robot gliding behind them.
We were hoping,
Dara gripped my hand. It's great to see you here.
Lupe hugged us. I introduced Kenlith. Lupe gave him a smile. He burst into tears.
I'm sorry, he sobbed. You look like my mother.
She put her arms around him. Ram beckoned them into the seats. He huddled against her, gazing up at her face in instant adoration. Derek studied me sharply and asked how I was.
Okay, I said, since we found you.
We're all better now, Ram said. I thought we'd lost you forever.
We asked 1,000 questions. Where had they been since the Hoppers picked them up? What was this place? How had they found their own way here? How did they control the robots? What had they learned about the builders of the Trilithons, the frozen city, the towering cone above us?
Pig questions! Derek shrugged them off. We keep looking for answers and always find more to ask. Most of what we have is guesswork. You've seen the cyborgs. That's what we call the Hoppers and the Robots. You've seen the empty sky. You must have come through Omega. That's Lupe's name for the city. You know as much as we do.
You got here, Ram said. All we've done is follow.
Tell us how you manage that.
It's a long story. Ram's face went bleak. It wasn't easy.
Lupe worked the dispenser and brought us a plate of little lemon-flavored cakes and yellow globes that had almost the taste of ripe peaches. Derek opened a cabinet and came back with a tray loaded with pitchers, glasses, and a bowl of ice.
It's not quite the Kentucky bourbon we used to drink on poker nights. He held a bottle of amber liquid up to the light. But the cyborgs make a fair mint julep when you can teach them what you want.
He filled our glasses.
Here's to Planet Alpha and the Omegans.
To the Four Horsemen,
Lupe waved her glass.
Together again.
I sipped cautiously. It wasn't bourbon, but it had a hint of mint and a fiery bite. Kenlith wanted a taste. Derry gave him a little of it mixed with water. He sipped and made a face.
Oof.
You came through Delta? Lupe asked.
Delta? Ram shook his head. We never knew a name for it.
We tagged them in Greek, Derek said, in the order in which we think the Omegans reached them. They must have evolved here, which makes this Alpha, the Octagons on Beta.
Ram summed up our story. His voice grew hoarse and slow when he came to the slave rebellion, our captivity, the blood rot pandemic, our escape with Whitewater up the Blood River. He broke it off, with not a word about the Krails.
Celia?
Kenlith said.
Don't forget her.
Ram's face went hard. He gulped and said nothing.
She was beautiful,
Kenlith told Lupe.
We lived in her home.
She was white,
Ram spoke at last, his voice quick and sharp.
We fell in love. She's dead. I can't talk about her now.
Kenlith sat playing with his crystal tetrahedron while we talked. Lights flashed in it, sometimes a shining hieroglyph, sometimes a shape that baffled me. Now and then an identical tetrahedron sprang from one of its faces and vanished again, a second pyramid of golden light with some momentary image inside it. Once a chord of strange music pealed out. So loud it startled me, and I saw the tiny image of a woman's head, fair-haired and entirely human. She was singing to the music, the rhythm strange, her voice loud and clear. He pressed a point that muffled it to a whisper.
Sorry, he said. It surprised me.
Ram caught his breath, staring at the little image. Derek and Lupe leaned to see. The woman was young and very blonde. She looked much like Sheko in the Colossi we had seen on Delta, almost like Celia Krail herself.
Amazing, Lupe turned to Derek. Is she an Omegan?
Maybe, he shook his unkempt head. More likely an Omegan creation engineered to populate the new worlds. Maybe a distant cousin of our own. I'd like to know.
Kenlith pressed another point and the image was gone.
A holographic projector?
Derek took it, squinted at it, tried the points. Nothing happened.
We saw a rack of things like it in the Octagon.
He grinned at Kenlith. I hope you learn to work it.
We've seen 1,000 artifacts we didn't understand, Lupe nodded. Enough to fill a museum if we could get them back to Earth. Enough to keep 100 scholars busy for the next 100 years. I wondered if we could ever get back to Earth with anything at all.
Derek offered his juleps again. Ram took one and sat sipping it slowly, staring at Kenlith and his toy. Thinking of Celia, I imagined. I declined the julep and asked him to say more about the Omegans and Planet Alpha. It gets me. That black sky with no sun. The frozen air. The dead city. Earth so far away, I feel like I was lost in Dante's hell.
So did we. Lost in little mama's hell.
Derek nodded at the robot still at the airlock door. It stood rigidly motionless, but its eye disc seemed to follow when he moved. A slow pulse of dim green and orange light beat from its head down through the crystal bits that made its body.
The cyborgs gave us rough times. They guard the gates. We had a pass test to convince them we're human. Lupe was there first, of course. She helped me through.
Stiff tests, Lupe said. But the cyborgs were never vicious, and I had a bit of good luck. The bad luck of an Arab who died 1,000 years ago, back when he must have been carrying Islam across North Africa. He blundered on the Sahara Gate, and a hopper picked him up. He flunked the tests and never got beyond beta, but he left useful clues for me.
Poor guy, Derek grinned. He must have thought they had him in his Muslim hell.
I found a few useful items in the octagon, she went on. It's hard to be sure how they got there. I imagine his disciples could have made the Sahara Gate a sort of shrine to him and left offerings the hoppers picked up. There were weapons, a few gold coins, an ancient manuscript of the Koran that a true believer would die for. The cyborgs learned a little Arabic in the course of his interrogation, and they don't forget. I have a smattering of Arabic, enough to help me get past the hurdles.
Enough to get us here to Alpha just a few weeks ago, Derek shook his head in awe. The sky's a wonderland. I wish we had a telescope. The Sieg would be splendid.
He saw me shiver.
It's no tropic paradise, he grinned as if amused at me. That's because we're outside the galaxy, outside a globular cluster. I think our Milky Way is hidden behind it. It's probably older, formed before the galaxy was. Not the best place for life to begin, because the cluster stars are poor in the heavy elements it needs. Yet, Omegan life was born here.
Here? Ram turned to stare at him. On this dead planet?
Well, it's been a graveyard for the last few 100 million years, Derek nodded. The tomb of the Omegans, but it was somewhere in the cluster once, with suns enough to warm it.
Well, how did it get out here?
Well, it must have been ejected. Derek paused to gaze at Kenlith, who had laid his magic toy aside, and moved to snuggle up to Lupe. Stars are crowded in a cluster. Their chaotic gravitational forces can toss a planet out.
And cold killed its people?
Not the Omegans. He shook his head. Rather, I think it must have forced their evolution. We don't know what they knew or remembered, but their history could have made an epic. They had to change with the changes in their world. They invented the science and the high technology that kept them alive, and finally let them send the cyborgs out to explore the galaxy and build the trilithons.
He sighed and shook his head.
I'm sorry they died.
What killed them? Ram stared at him. After they'd hung on so long.
We hope to find the answer here. Or maybe out in the old city if we can ever get back to Earth and return with a team and equipment to begin the excavation.
I hope to.
Lupe's lean face lit.
I've spent my life digging for our own prehistory in Asia, Chile, Kenya, New Mexico, but Omega City? It's an incredible treasure. Whole buildings there under the frozen air that look still intact. Who knows what we can uncover?
A wild dream.
Derek grinned and shook his head at her.
Imagine the problems of working there, maybe 1 billion light years from Earth, in high vacuum at absolute zero. Problems enough, she nodded. But I believe the Omegans left us solutions, if we can just learn a little of what they knew. A great game, he shrugged, laughing at her. If we can learn the rules, we'd be gods. We might make ourselves immortal. We might restore the Grand Dominion. We might make ourselves the lords of Earth and turn it into a real utopia. We dream, she smiled at him fondly with a wry little quirk of her lips. We do collide with awkward realities, but the hopes and visions keep us going, and what we're learning is wonderful enough.
I've still got questions, Ram frowned. If the Omegans were really immortal, how come they're dead?
That is a paradox, Derek nodded soberly. But look at the logic of it. Immortals can't afford to replicate themselves. Their progeny would supplant them. They have to stop reproduction. I think the Omegans conquered death. I think that did them in.
Tell me how.
Well, if you want to guess, perhaps they'd lived as long as they wanted to. The cold hadn't hurt them. Their cyborgs had found warmer worlds where they might have gone, even out to Earth if they found it fit for them. They chose to stay, chose to die. That's just my guess. If they left any records of the reasons why, we haven't read them. He shrugged and grinned at Lupe. If they'd learned everything and done everything, perhaps they were simply bored with everything and found no reason to go on, or maybe... He stopped to study Kenlith, who was absorbed again with the images and symbols flickering in his crystal pyramid. Or maybe they are still alive. In us.
Ram blinked and his eyebrows lifted.
We are their children, he said. We know they were skilled genetic engineers. We know the cyborgs picked up pre-human hominids and brought Homo sapiens back to Earth. You've had a glimpse of the new arrivals there in the shadow of Kilimanjaro. I think the Omegans left their own genes in us.
Ram stared, shaking his head.
The answer to an old question in human evolution, Lupe nodded. Early hominids had small skulls. The sudden enlargement of the brain has been a puzzle. Maybe the Omegan genetic engineers enlarged the human skull to make room for gifts of theirs that our first forebears had never needed. Language, art, abstract thought. We may be the new Omegans.
Chapter 36.
So much we'll never know.
Derek's shoulders sagged to a weary shrug.
Not if we could work here another 100 years. But we're learning fast.
Lupe was more cheerful.
The Omegans may be dead, but the cyborgs are still with us, and we're on the road to Wonderland. I think the cone above our heads is an interstellar signal tower, in instant touch with all the trilithons. It must have been the nerve net of the Grand Dominion. Guesswork!
Looking out at the mosaic riddles on the tunnel wall, Derek shook his head.
Chicken tracks! We've tried, but we'd get more out of the omens than the entrails of a goat. It's frustrating, Lupe nodded. Sometimes we fail, but we've got to look at what we have. The Omegans knew the Grand Dominion might not be eternal, but they saw farther. They stored the records of their culture here, a gift to whatever future they hoped for. Here, outside the galaxy, the planet's a deep freeze that ought to be perpetual. A fabulous bonanza. If we can get at it.
Derek stared out at the riddles on the wall and turned at last with a thoughtful nod for Ram. There are tunnels filled with what must be libraries and museums, enormous halls filled with artifacts that stump us, miles of mosaic print we can't read. The whole place is what old Egypt was before Young and Champollion deciphered the hieroglyphics on the Rosetta Stone. Behind the unkempt beard, his face set tight. We've found no Rosetta Stone.
But we've just begun, Lupe said. The job took them a good many years. Let's look at the site for a hint of all we hope to find.
Derek raised his hand to signal the robot, which was waiting at the airlock like a human helper. It made no sound, but its eye discs flickered and the pulse of light quickened through its limbs. Moving with a swift economy of action, it uncoupled the crawlers. Leaving ours there in the dome, Derek drove us farther down the corkscrew curves. Huge yellow glyphs blazed out of a spot on the wall ahead, changed slowly to others in blue, changed and changed again, faster and faster until they became a shimmering sun. They winked out, and the same sequence began again. Beyond it, a ragged patch rippled with waves of rainbow light in a way that hurt my eyes and left me giddy.
"Look at that!" He stopped the crawler to grin at me. "It's driving me crazy!"
"It's a tough nut to crack," Lupe nodded in grave agreement.
"I'm not even sure we have the right senses to get the full signals, or the minds to read them if we did. Our brains were shaped to make specific responses to specific challenges in our own environment. To find food, defend territory, defeat rivals, win mates, interact with others.
We can do a lot more," Derek said.
"Do higher math or write symphonic music or build the Hubble telescope. But we aren't Omegans. Evolving in their own very different environment, they had to cope with another set of challenges. They must have had different brains. If that's a message for us, we haven't got a clue to what it is."
He gestured at the mosaics we were passing.
"More chicken tracks. Lupe says they have to be symbolic of what the Omegans knew and felt and believed. But we simply weren't evolved to grasp them. We'll never think like the Omegans did."
He sighed again and drove us on. Those perplexing images gave way to panel after panel that shone with lines of symbols like those in Ram's e-book. Some of them had graceful flourishes that reminded me of Arabic, but they flickered in a way that made my head ache.
"That's their writing," Derek frowned. "A code without a key."
"But we can look for repeated patterns." Lupe made him stop the crawler and pointed to a green-lettered panel with a line below it set in tiny ruby-colored stones. "See those symbols in red? The text is in sections, separated by breaks like that. Each one has that sort of centered heading."
"Just maybe those repeated symbols could be chapter numbers."
"They are."
Kenneth looked up from his toy.
"That's number 207 in Omegan. I think it would be more the way we count. The Omegans count to 11 before they come to 10.
"So they used base 12?
Derek stared at him.
"Instead of base 10?
"Kenneth,"
Lupe blinked,
"how do you know?"
I'm taking lessons."
He held up the crystal tetrahedron.
"I've learned the numbers. I've begun to get words. Water sounds like sheath, though I can't say it quite right. A river is en sheath. A sea is ru sheath."
"That's amazing."
Lupe hugged him and leaned to look for herself into the crystal pyramid. "If you found a Rosetta Stone," she hugged him closer,
"you're a hero."
He beamed at her, tears of joy gleaming in his eyes. She and Derek were instantly ecstatic, the secrets of Omega almost in their grasp. Eagerly, they tried the tetrahedron themselves, but had to give it up.
"We humans are born with a special gift for language that works while we are children," Derek said. "A sort of pattern for grammar, ready for us to fill in the blanks as we learn."
"A gift from the Omegans, I imagine," Lupe said. "And Kenleth still has it."
They began to study with him, copying the glyphs, taking notes, debating rules of Omegan grammar. They kept the robot busy, sending it outside with a sort of video camera to get pictures and collect artifacts. They invented a jargon of their own to discuss every clue to Omegan science and history. I rejoiced in their delight, but it was hard for me to share. Even coupled together, the two crawlers gave us a very tiny living space. We had room enough to sit, to eat, to sleep, but not much else. I felt shut in, cramped, and useless. Ram sat alone for hour after hour, brooding. I thought over all he had lost. Kenlith was restless as a monkey in a cage. He roved every nook of the crawlers and tested every gadget, but always came back to huddle over the tetrahedron, watching the flickering enigmas inside it, listening to the strange heads that sprang out of it, learning alien phonemes. For me, the confinement became intolerable. I had nothing at all to do. The effects of the fever were still in me, and I could never shake off my dread of the eternal bitter night that held us in prison. I longed for change, for space, sunlight, people, earth, my eastern friends and colleagues, my old house in Portalis. I couldn't help asking when we might go home.
Don't think about it, Lupe seemed shocked. This is too exciting. We've found a key to dreamland. We can't quit now.
Look at it, Will, Derek begged me very soberly. Of course we're anxious to get back with all our news, but we wouldn't be welcome now. What we're finding would upset too many apple carts. 10,000 experts in everything from archaeology to zoology would unite to defend their territories. Without evidence they can't deny, they'd laugh us off the earth. We'll have to have artifacts, photos, maybe robots, or a giant hopper. One of them ought to persuade anybody. He grinned at the thought and grew grave again. Don't rush us. Getting solid proof enough together will take time. We can't afford to fail.
I sat there dumb, blinking at them, tears blurring my vision. I loved them, the four horsemen. We'd worked and played together half our lives, even before we found the Sahara Gate. I didn't want to leave them, yet I had to get away.
You're disappointed, Will.
Lupe gave me a searching look. You really want to go? My throat aching, I felt more than I could try to say.
We could send the two of you.
Derek turned to Ram. If you want to go, if you can learn to work the cybroids and the trilithons...
Can I go?
Kenlith appealed eagerly to me.
Will you take me?
I'd thought of that. I'd come to love him, the child I'd never had. Life on Earth would be lonely if I did get back alone. Awkward, too, with so much I couldn't try to explain. I would need him, miss him terribly. I'd weighed the possibilities. He would be illegal in a way the feds could never figure out, but illegals are common in New Mexico. Perhaps I could adopt him, put him through school, watch him play in Little League, help him find his place on Earth. It could be a great adventure for him, a world as new as his had been for us. Of course, I told him, I'll love to have you with me.
Thank you.
He came to put his arms around me.
I'd love to see your world.
Lupe looked at Derek and shook her head. Half a minute passed before she caught her breath and spoke.
Kenlith, we need you here to help us learn the Omegan language. Your tetrahedron is our key to all the mysteries of Omegan science and history. Without it, we could fail. Won't you please stay long enough at least to put us on the road?
He wiped his eyes and looked at me. I had to nod.
If they need you, I think you ought to stay.
Then I will.
His voice was choked and he had to wipe his eyes again. But I'll always love you, Ty Will. He put his quivering arm around me and looked at Ram.
I'll miss you too, Ty Ram. If you go, I hope you'll both be happy back on Earth.
I've been thinking. Ram stood up to face us with an expression of austere decision I had never seen before. Muscular and tall, the crown of worlds shining on his forehead, he was suddenly magnificent, a reminder of the colossal figures of Anak we had seen on the Delta. Thinking a lot, his voice seemed deeper and I heard a sudden ring of confidence. I don't belong here. There's nothing for me on Earth. I had a bad time on Delta. I guess I ran away, but now I see where I belong. He looked at Derek. Can you send me back there? Derek frowned and slowly nodded.
If you really want to go.
My duty. Absently, Ram fingered the glowing crown of worlds. We left it in a bloody mess. If I can help clean it up, that's what I was meant to do.
And rebuild the Grand Dominion?
Lupe's voice lifted.
If you can do it.
A very tall order. Very gravely he shrugged. Maybe too tall to talk about. But the killer virus left a vacuum. Chaos will be coming in to fill it unless... He stopped to gaze at Kenlith and the tetrahedron. Perhaps I can begin something better. I've got to do what I can.
Chapter 37. Leaving Kenlith and my fellow horsemen left an ache of loss, but I had to go. I'd suffered too many shocks of strangeness and felt too sick of my own helpless idleness in the cramped little crawler. Too long here beneath Omega's deadly cold and eternal night, I wanted the warm sun of Earth, my quiet hometown, the peace of the old book-walled study that had been my father's office. I had to go alone. Though the weakness of the virus was still in me, my own spirits rose as we planned the trip. Ram helped invent a harmless tale for me to tell. Lupe offered to pack a collection of Omegan artifacts to help me prove my story.
You'll be getting back with no passport, Derek reminded me, with no money and nothing to prove who you are.
He found a handful of what he thought were Omegan coins, heavy little metal donuts ringed with Omegan script. They looked like gold. In time to come, they might be priceless, but not until our story could be revealed. I left them with him. When I was ready, they gathered at the airlock to say goodbye. Derek and Ram shook my hand. Lupe hugged and kissed me. Kenlith clung a long time to me and sobbed a promise to come to stay with me down on Earth if ever he was able. They all stood waving as I hoisted my worn backpack and turned to the airlock. Sudden emotion overwhelmed me. My voice broke as I tried to call a last farewell. My heart was thumping. I felt unsteady on my feet. My vision blurred. Perhaps I stumbled.
Will! Lupe looked at me sharply. You're pale. Do you feel well? Are you really able to go? I'm okay. I had to catch a breath. Just anxious. It's a long way to Earth. I don't know what to expect on the way.
The silent robot stood waiting at the lock, a tall man-shape made of crystal bits. It reached a glittering hand to assist me through the door, but Lupe called me back.
I'm concerned for you, Will. Don't give us up. We'll be coming. While you wait, there's one thing you can do that ought to keep your hopes up. When you feel able, you might look for influences the Omegan visits may have left on Earth.
Influences? That confused me.
What influences could be possible? They are more than possible.
Her serious tone surprised me.
The Omegans, or their robot proxies, were there. They explored the planet and built the Trilithon. They abducted pre-humans and brought back Homo sapiens. They had to leave.